He sprung up nimbly, but another rider rode into him, knocking him down again. Then suddenly, someone threw themselves at him and pinned him to the ground. Then there was a flash and a piercing pain in the back of his head. And darkness. Part 6. There was sand on his lips. When he tried to spit it out, he realized he was lying face down on the ground, and he was tied up. He raised his head a little and heard voices. He was lying on the forest floor by a pine tree. Some 20 paces away stood unsaddled horses. They were obscured behind the feathery fronds of ferns, but one of those horses was, without a doubt, Dandelion's chestnut.
3 sacks of corn, he heard. Good, Torque. Very good. You've done well.
That's not all, said the bleating voice, which could only be the Sylvan Devil. Look at this, Galar. It looks like beans, but it's completely white, and the size of it. And this is called oil seed. They make oil from it.
Geralt squeezed his eyes shut, then opened them again. No, it wasn't a dream. The devil and Galar, whoever he was, were using the old language, the language of elves. But the words corn, beans, and oilseed were in the common tongue. And this, what's this? Asked Galar.
Flaxseed. Flax, you know. You make shirts from flax. It's much cheaper than silk, and more hard-wearing. It's quite a complicated process, as far as I know, but I'll find out the ins and outs.
As long as it takes root, this flax of yours, as long as it doesn't go to waste like the turnip, grumbled Galar, in the same strange volapuk. Try to get some new turnip seedlings, Torque.
Have no fear, bleated the Sylvan. There's no problem with that here. Everything grows like hell. I'll get you some. Don't worry.
And one more thing, said Galar. Finally find out what that three-field system of theirs is all about.
The Witcher carefully raised his head and tried to turn round.
Geralt!
He heard a whisper.
Are you awake?
Dandelion, he whispered back. Where are we? What's happening?
Dandelion only grunted quietly. Geralt had had enough. He cursed, tensed himself, and turned onto his side. In the middle of the glade stood the Sylvan Devil with, as he now knew, the sweet name of Torque. He was busy loading sacks, bags, and packs onto the horses. He was being helped by a slim, tall man who could only be Galar. The latter, hearing the Witcher move, turned around. His hair was black with a distinct hint of dark blue. He had sharp features, big, bright eyes, and pointed ears. Galar was an elf from the mountains, a pure-blooded Aen Shi, a representative of the old people. Galar wasn't alone. 6 more sat at the edge of the glade. One was busy emptying Dandelion's packs, another strummed the troubadour's lute. The remainder, gathered around an untied sack, were greedily devouring turnips and raw carrots.
Vanadin, Toruviel, said Galar, indicating the prisoners with a nod of his head. Vedrai entli.
Torque jumped up and bleated.
No, Galar, no! Philivandrel has forbidden it. Have you forgotten?
No, I haven't forgotten.
Galar threw 2 tied sacks across the horse's back. But we have to check if they haven't loosened the knots.
What do you want from us?
The troubadour moaned, as one of the elves knocked him to the ground with his knee and checked the knots.
Why are you holding us prisoners? What do you want? I'm Dandelion, a poor
Geralt, heard the sound of a blow. He turned round, twisted his head. The elf standing over Dandelion had black eyes and raven hair, which fell luxuriantly over her shoulders, except for 2 thin plaits braided at her temples. She was wearing a short leather camisole over a loose shirt of green satin and tight woolen leggings tucked into riding boots. Her hips were wrapped around with a coloured shawl which reached halfway down her thighs.
Quiglossi?
She asked, looking at the Witcher and playing with the hilt of a long dagger in her belt.
Quillen pavien il lea? Nel lea, he contested. Teen pavien, ain't she? Did you hear?
The elf turned to her companion, the tall she, who, not bothering to check Geralt's knots, was strumming away at Dandelion's lute with an expression of indifference on his long face.
Did you hear, Vanadin? The ape-man can talk. He can even be impertinent.
The she shrugged, making the feathers decorating his jacket rustle.
All the more reason to gag him, Turuviel.
The elf leant over Geralt. She had long lashes, an unnaturally pale complexion, and parched, cracked lips. She wore a necklace of carved golden birch pieces on a thong wrapped around her neck several times.
Well, say something else, ape-man, she hissed. We'll see what your throat, so used to barking, is capable of.
What's this? Do you need an excuse to hit a bound man?
The Witcher turned over on his back with an effort and spat out the sand.
Hit me without any excuses. I've seen how you like it. Let off some steam.
The elf straightened.
I've already let off some steam on you while your hands were free, she said. I rode you down and swiped you on the head, and I'll also finish you off when the time comes.
He didn't answer.
I'd much rather stab you from close up, looking you in the eyes, continued the elf. But you stink most hideously, human, so I'll shoot you.
As you wish.
The Witcher shrugged, as far as the knots let him.
Do as you like, noble Aen Shi. You shouldn't miss a tied-up, motionless target.
The elf stood over him, legs spread, and leant down, flashing her teeth.
No, I shouldn't, she hissed. I hit whatever I want. But you can be sure you won't die from the first arrow, or the second. I'll try to make sure you can feel yourself dying.
Don't come so close, he grimaced, pretending to be repulsed. You stink most hideously, Aen Shi.
The elf jumped back, rocked on her narrow hips, and forcefully kicked him in the thigh. Geralt drew his legs in and curled up, knowing where she was aiming next. He succeeded, and got her boot in the hip, so hard his teeth rattled. The tall elf standing next to her echoed each kick with a sharp chord on the lute.
Leave him, Turuviel, bleated the sylvan. Have you gone mad? Galar, tell her to stop. Tissa,
shrieked Turuviel, and kicked the Witcher again. The tall she tore so violently at the strings that one snapped with a protracted whine.
Enough of that! Enough, for God's sake!
Dandelion yelled fretfully, wriggling and tumbling in the ropes.
Why are you bullying him, you stupid whore? Leave us alone! And you, leave my loot alone, all right?
Turuviel turned to him with an angry grimace on her cracked lips.
Musician! She growled. A human, yet a musician! A lutenist!
Without a word, she pulled the instrument from the tall elf's hand, forcefully smashed the lute against the pine, and threw the remains, tangled in the strings, on Dandelion's chest.
Play on a cow's horn, you savage, not a lute!
The poet turned as white as death. His lips quivered. Geralt, feeling cold fury rising up somewhere within him, drew to Ruviel's eyes with his own.
What are you staring at? Hissed the elf, leaning over. Filthy ape-man! Do you want me to gouge out those insect eyes of yours?
Her necklace hung down just above him. The Witcher tensed, lunged, and caught the necklace in his teeth, tugging powerfully, curling his legs in and turning on his side. Turuviel lost her balance and fell on top of him. Geralt wriggled in the ropes like a fish, crushed the elf beneath him, tossed his head back with such force that the vertebrae in his neck cracked, and, with all his might, butted her in the face with his forehead. Turuviel howled and struggled. They pulled him off her brutally, and tugging at his clothes and hair, lifted him. One of them struck him. He felt rings cut the skin over his cheekbone, and the forest danced and swam in front of his eyes. He saw Turuviel lurch to her knees, blood pouring from her nose and mouth. The elf wrenched the dagger from its sheath but gave a sob, hunched over, grasped her face, and dropped her head between her knees. The tall elf in the jacket, adorned with colourful feathers, took the dagger from her hand and approached the Witcher. He smiled as he raised the blade. Geralt saw him through a red haze, blood from his forehead, which he'd cut against Turuviel's teeth, poured into his eye sockets.
No!
Bleated Torqua, running up to the elf and hanging onto his arm.
Don't kill him! No!
Vorle, Vanadin, a sonorous voice suddenly commanded. Quisin, kill me, villain. Galar.
Geralt turned his head as far as the fist clutching his hair permitted. The horse which had just entered the glade was as white as snow, its mane long, soft and silky as a woman's hair. The hair of the rider sitting in the sumptuous saddle was identical in colour, pulled back at the forehead by a bandana studded with sapphires. Torqua, bleating now and then, ran up to the horse, caught hold of the stirrup, and showered the white-haired elf with a torrent of words. The she interrupted him with an authoritative gesture, and jumped down from his saddle. He approached Toruviel, who was being supported by two elves, and carefully removed the bloodied handkerchief from her face. Toruviel gave a heartrending groan. The she shook his head and approached the witcher. His burning black eyes, shining like stars in his pale face, had dark rings beneath them, as if he had not slept for several nights in a row.
"You stink, even when bound," he said quietly, in unaccented common tongue. "Like a basilisk. I'll draw my conclusions from that."
"Toruviel started it," bleated the devil. "She kicked him when he was tied up, as if she'd lost her mind."
With a gesture, the elf ordered him to be quiet. At his command, the other she dragged the witcher and Dandelion under the pine tree and fastened them to the trunk with belts. Then they all knelt by the prostrate Toruviel, sheltering her. After a moment, Geralt heard her yell and fight in their arms.
"I didn't want this," said the Sylvan,
still standing next to them.
"I didn't, human. I didn't know they'd arrive just when we... when they stunned you and tied your companion up. I asked them to leave you there, in the hops, but..."
"They couldn't leave any witnesses," muttered the witcher.
"Surely they won't kill us, will they?" groaned Dandelion. "Surely they won't."
Torquay said nothing, wiggling his soft nose.
"Bloody hell," the poet groaned. "They're going to kill us. What's all this about, Geralt? What did we witness?"
"Our Sylvan friend is on a special mission in the Valley of Flowers. Am I right, Torquay? At the Elves' request, he's stealing seeds, seedlings, knowledge about farming. What else, devil?"
"Whatever I can," bleated Torquay. "Everything they need, and show me something they don't need. They're starving in the mountains, especially in winter, and they know nothing about farming. And before they've learned to domesticate game or poultry, and to cultivate what they can in their plots of land, they haven't got the time, human."
"I don't care a shit about their time. What have I done to them?" groaned Dandelion. "What wrong have I done them?"
"Think carefully," said the white-haired elf, approaching without a sound. "And maybe you can answer the question yourself. He's simply taking revenge for all the wrong that man has done the elves."
The witcher smiled wryly.
"It's all the same to him who he takes his revenge on. Don't be deluded by his noble bearing and elaborate speech, Dandelion. He's no different than the black eyes who knocked us down. He has to unload his powerless hatred on somebody."
The elf picked up Dandelion's shattered lute. For a moment, he looked at the ruined instrument in silence, and finally threw it into the bushes.
"If I wanted to give vent to hatred, or a desire for revenge," he said, playing with a pair of soft white leather gloves, "I'd storm the valley at night, burn down the village and kill the villagers. Childishly simple. They don't even put out a guard. They don't see or hear us when they come to the forest. Can there be anything simpler? Anything easier than a swift, silent arrow from behind a tree? But we are not hunting you. It is you, man with strange eyes, who is hunting our friend, the Sylvan Torqua."
"That's exaggerating," bleated the devil. "What hunt? We were having a bit of fun."
"It is you, humans, who hate anything that differs from you, be it only by the shape of its ears," the elf went on calmly, paying no attention to the Sylvan. "That's why you took our land from us, drove us from our homes, forced us into the savage mountains. You took our Dol Blathanna, the Valley of Flowers. I am Filavandrel Eanfidael of Silver Towers, of the Faelorn family from White Ships. Now, exiled and hounded to the edge of the world, I am Filavandrel of the Edge of the World." "The world is huge," muttered the witcher. We can find room. There's enough space. The world is huge, repeated the elf. That's true, human. But you have changed this world. At first, you used force to change it. You treated it as you treat anything that falls into your hands. Now, it looks as if the world has started to fit in with you. It's given way to you. It's given in. Geralt didn't reply. Torquay spoke the truth, continued Philivandrel. Yes, we are starving. Yes, we are threatened with annihilation. The sun shines differently. The air is different. Water is not as it used to be. The things we used to eat, made use of, are dying, diminishing, deteriorating. We never cultivated the land. Unlike you humans, we never tore at it with hoes and ploughs. To you, the earth pays a bloody tribute. It bestowed gifts on us. You tear the earth's treasures from it by force. For us, the earth gave birth and blossomed because it loved us. Well, no love lasts forever. But we still want to survive. Instead of stealing grain, you can buy it, as much as you need. You still have a great many things that humans consider valuable. You can trade. Philivandrel smiled contemptuously. With you? Never. Geralt frowned, breaking up the dried blood on his cheek. The devil with you, then, and your arrogance and contempt. By refusing to cohabit, you're condemning yourselves to annihilation. To cohabit, to come to an understanding, that's your only chance. Philivandrel leaned forwards, his eyes blazing. Cohabit on your terms? He asked in a changed yet still calm voice. Acknowledging your sovereignty, losing our identity? Cohabit as what? Slaves? Pariahs? Cohabit with you from beyond the walls you've built to fence yourselves away in towns? Cohabit with your women and hang for it? Or look on at what half-blood children must live with? Why are you avoiding my eyes, strange human? How do you find cohabiting with neighbours from whom, after all, you do differ somewhat? I manage. The Witcher looked him straight in the eyes. I manage because I have to. Because I've no other way out. Because I've overcome the vanity and pride of being different. I've understood that they are a pitiful defence against being different. Because I've understood that the sun shines differently when something changes. But I'm not the axis of those changes. The sun shines differently, but it will continue to shine. And jumping at it with a hoe isn't going to do anything. We've got to accept facts, elf. That's what we've got to learn. That's what you want, isn't it? With his wrist, Philivandrel wiped away the sweat above his white brows. Is that what you want to impose on others? The conviction that your time has come, your human era and age, and that what you're doing to other races is as natural as the rising and the setting of the sun? That everybody has to come to terms with it, to accept it. And you accuse me of vanity. And what are the views you're proclaiming? Why don't you humans finally realize that your domination of the world is as natural and repellent as lice multiplying in a sheepskin coat? You could propose we cohabit with lice and get the same reaction. And I'd listen to the lice as attentively if they, in return for our acknowledgement of their supremacy, were to agree to allow common use of the coat. So don't waste time discussing it with such an unpleasant insect, elf, said the Witcher, barely able to control his voice. I'm surprised you want to arouse a feeling of guilt and repentance in such a louse as me. You're pitiful, Philivandrel. You're embittered, hungry for revenge and conscious of your own powerlessness. Go on, thrust the sword into me. Revenge yourself on the whole human race. You'll see what relief that'll bring you. First, kick me in the balls or the teeth, like Teruviel.
Philivandril turned his head.
Teruviel is sick, he said. I know that disease and its symptoms.
Geralt spat over his shoulder.
The treatment I gave her ought to help. This conversation is senseless.
Philivandril stepped away.
I'm sorry we've got to kill you. Revenge has nothing to do with it. It's purely practical. Torqua has to carry on with his task, and no one can suspect who he's doing it for. We can't afford to go to war with you, and we won't be taken in by trade and exchange. We're not so naive that we don't know your merchants are just outposts of your way of life. We know what follows them, and what sort of cohabitation they bring.
Elf? Dandelion, who had remained silent until now, said quietly,
I've got friends. People who'll pay ransom for us, in the form of provisions, if you like, or any form. Think about it. After all, those stolen seeds aren't going to save you.
Nothing will save them any more.
Geralt interrupted him.
Don't grovel, Dandelion. Don't beg him. It's pointless and pitiful.
For someone who has lived such a short time. Philivandril forced a smile.
You show an astounding disdain for death, human. Your mother gives birth to you only once, and only once do you die, the witcher said calmly. An appropriate philosophy for a louse, don't you agree? And your longevity. I pity you, Philivandril.
The elf raised his eyebrows.
Why? You're pathetic, with your little stolen sacks of seeds on pack horses, with your handful of grain, that tiny crumb thanks to which you plan to survive, and with that mission of yours which is supposed to turn your thoughts from imminent annihilation, because you know this is the end. Nothing will sprout or yield crops on the plateaus. Nothing will save you now. But you live long, and you will live very long in arrogant isolation, fewer and fewer of you, growing weaker and weaker, more and more bitter. And you know what will happen then, Philivandril? You know that desperate young men with the eyes of 100-year-old men, and withered, barren and sick girls like Teruviel, will lead those who can still hold a sword and bow in their hands down into the valleys. You'll come down into the blossoming valleys to meet death, wanting to die honourably in battle, and not in sickbeds of misery, where anemia, tuberculosis and scurvy will send you. Then, long-living Aeon She, you'll remember me. You'll remember that I pitied you, and you'll understand that I was right.
Time will tell who was right, said the elf quietly. And herein lies the advantage of longevity. I've got a chance of finding out, if only because of that stolen handful of grain. You won't have a chance like that. You'll die shortly.
Spare him at least.
Geralt indicated Dandelion with his head.
No, not out of lofty mercy, out of common sense. Nobody's going to ask after me. But they are going to take revenge for him.
You judge my common sense poorly, the elf said after some hesitation. If he survives, thanks to you, he'll undoubtedly feel obliged to avenge you.
You can be sure of that,
Dandelion burst out, pale as death.
You can be sure, you son of a bitch. Kill me too, because I promise otherwise I'll set the world against you. You'll see what Lysma Furcoat can do. We'll finish you off, even if we have to level those mountains of yours to the ground. You can be sure of that.
How stupid you are, Dandelion, sighed the witcher.
Your mother gives birth to you only once, and only once do you die, said the poet haughtily,
the effect somewhat spoiled by his teeth rattling like castanets.
That settles it.
Philivandril took his gloves from his belt and pulled them on.
It's time to end this.
At his command, The elves positioned themselves opposite Geralt and Dandelion with bows. They did it quickly. They'd obviously been waiting for this a long time. One of them, the Witcher noticed, was still chewing a turnip. Teruviel, her mouth and nose bandaged with cloth and birch bark, stood next to the archers without a bow.
"Shall I bind your eyes?" asked Philivandrel. "Go away!"
The Witcher turned his head.
"Go! Ad jebel ebers!"
Dandelion finished for him, his teeth chattering.
"Oh, no!"
the Sylvan suddenly bleated, running up and sheltering the condemned men with his body.
"Have you lost your mind, Philandrel? This is not what we agreed, not this. You were supposed to take them up to the mountains, hold them somewhere in some cave, until we'd finished."
"Torquor," said the elf. "I can't. I can't risk it. Did you see what he did to Teruviel while tied up? I can't risk it."
"I don't care what you can or can't. What do you imagine? You think I'll let you murder them? Here, on my land, right next to my hamlet. You accursed idiots. Get out of here with your bows, or I'll ram you down. Ugh, ugh."
"Torquay." Philivandrel rested his hands on his belt. "This is necessary."
"Duvel scheiss, not necessary."
"Move aside, Torquay."
The Sylvan shook his ears, bleated even louder, stared and bent his elbow in an abusive gesture popular among dwarves.
"You're not going to murder anybody here. Get on your horses and out into the mountains, beyond the passes. Otherwise, you'll have to kill me, too."
"Be reasonable," said the white-haired elf slowly. "If we let them live, people are going to learn what you're doing. They'll catch you and torture you. You know what they're like, after all."
"I do,"
bleated the Sylvan, still sheltering Geralt and Dandelion.
"It turns out I know them better than I know you. And verily, I don't know who to side with. I regret allying myself with you, Philivandrel."
"You wanted to,"
said the elf coldly, giving a signal to the archers.
"You wanted to, Torquay. Elsparachlian, Evillian."
The elves drew arrows from their quivers.
"Go away, Torquay," said Geralt, gritting his teeth. "It's senseless. Get aside."
The Sylvan, without budging from the spot, showed him the dwarves' gesture.
"I can hear music,"
Dandelion suddenly sobbed.
"It happens," said the Witcher, looking at the arrowheads. "Don't worry. There's no shame in fear."
Philivandrel's face changed, screwed up in a strange grimace. The white-haired she suddenly turned round and gave a shout to the archers. They lowered their weapons. Leela entered the glade. She was no longer a skinny peasant girl in a sackcloth dress. Through the grasses covering the glade walked... no, not walked. Floated a queen. Radiant, golden-haired, fiery-eyed, ravishing. The queen of the fields, decorated with garlands of flowers, ears of corn, bunches of herbs. At her left-hand side, a young stag pattered on stiff legs. At her right, rustled an enormous hedgehog.
"Dena Meath," said Philivandrel with veneration,
and then bowed and knelt. The remaining elves also knelt. Slowly, reluctantly, they fell to their knees, one after the other, and bowed their heads low in veneration. Teruviel was the last to kneel.
"Hail, Dena Meath," repeated Philivandrel.
Leela didn't answer. She stopped several paces short of the elf and swept her blue eyes over Dandelion and Geralt. Torquay, still bowing, started cutting through the knots. None of the she moved. Leela stood in front of Philivandrel. She didn't say anything, didn't make the slightest sound. But the Witcher saw the changes on the elf's face, sensed the aura surrounding them, and was in no doubt they were communicating. The devil suddenly pulled at his sleeve.
"Your friend," he bleated quietly,
has decided to faint right on time. What shall we do?
Slap him across the face a couple of times.
With pleasure.
Philivandril got up from his knees. At his command, the elves fell to saddling the horses as quick as lightning.
Come with us, Dinamive, said the white-haired elf. We need you. Don't abandon us, Eternal One. Don't deprive us of your love. We'll die without it.
Leela slowly shook her head and indicated east, the direction of the mountains. The elf bowed, crumpling the ornate reins of his white-maned mount in his hands. Dandelion walked up, pale and dumbfounded, supported by the Sylvan. Leela looked at him and smiled. She looked into the witch's eyes. She looked long. She didn't say a word. Words weren't necessary. Most of the elves were already in their saddles when Philivandril and Heruviel approached. Geralt looked into the elf's black eyes, visible above the bandages.
Heruviel, he said, and didn't finish.
The elf nodded. From her saddle bow, she took a lute, a marvellous instrument of light, tastefully inlaid wood, with a slender engraved neck. Without a word, she handed the lute to Dandelion. The poet accepted the instrument and smiled, also without a word, but his eyes said a great deal.
Farewell, strange human, Philivandril said quietly to Geralt. You are right. Words aren't necessary. They won't change anything.
Geralt remained silent.
After some consideration, added the she, I've come to the conclusion that you were right when you pitied us. So, goodbye. Goodbye until we meet again, on the day when we descend into the valleys to die honourably. We'll look out for you then, Heruviel and I. Don't let us down.
For a long time, they looked at each other in silence, and then the Witcher answered briefly and simply,
I'll try.
Part 7.
By the gods, Geralt!
Dandelion stopped playing, hugged the lute and touched it with his cheek.
This wood sings on its own. These strings are alive. What wonderful tonality! Bloody hell, a couple of kicks and a bit of fear is a pretty low price to pay for such a superb lute. I'd have let myself be kicked from dawn to dusk if I'd known what I was going to get.
Geralt, are you listening to me at all?
It's difficult not to hear you two.
Geralt raised his head from the book and glanced at the Sylvan, who was still stubbornly squeaking on a peculiar set of pipes made from reeds of various lengths.
I hear you. The whole neighbourhood hears you.
Duvelscheiss! Not neighbourhood.
Torquay put his pipes aside.
A desert, that's what it is. A wilderness, a shithole. Eh? I miss my hemp.
He misses his hemp,
laughed Dandelion, carefully tuning the delicately engraved lute pegs.
You should have sat in the thicket, quiet as a dormouse, instead of scaring girls, destroying dykes and sullying the well. I think you're going to be more careful now and give up your tricks, eh, Torquay?
I like tricks, declared the Sylvan, baring his teeth, and I can't imagine life without them. But have it your way. I promise to be more careful on new territory. I'll be more restrained.
The night was cloudy and windy. The gale beat down the reeds and rustled in the branches of the bushes surrounding their camp. Dandelion threw some dry twigs into the fire. Torquay wriggled around on his makeshift bed, swiping mosquitoes away with his tail. A fish leapt in the lake with a splash.
I'll describe our whole expedition to the edge of the world in a ballad, declared Dandelion. And I'll describe you in it too, Torquay.
Don't think you'll get away with it, growled the Sylvan. I'll write a ballad too, then, and describe you, but in such a way as you won't be able to show your face in decent company for 12 years. So watch out. Geralt?
What?
Have you read anything interesting in that book which you so disgracefully wheedled out of those freemen?
I have.
So, read it to us before the fire burns out.
Yes, yes. Dandelion strummed the melodious strings of Toruviel's lute.
Read us something, Geralt.
The Witcher leant on his elbow, edging the volume closer to the fire.
Glimpsed she may be, he began, during the time of Sumor, from the days of Mai and June to the days of October. But most oft this haps on the feast of the scythe, which ancients would call Lammas. She revealeth herself as the fair-haired lady, in flowers all, and all that liveth followeth her path and clingeth to her as one, plant or beast. Hence her name is Lyphia. Ancients call her Danamebe, and venerate her greatly. Even the bearded, albeit in mountains, not on fields, they dwell, respect, and call her Blumenmagde.
Danamebe, muttered Dandelion. Dana Maeve, the Lady of the Fields.
Whence Lyphia treads, the earth blossometh and bringeth forth, and abundantly doth each creature breed, such is her might. All nations to her offer sacrifice of harvest, in vain hope their field, not another's, will by Lyphia visited be. Because it is also said that there cometh a day at end when Lyphia will come to settle among that tribe which above all others will rise. But these be mere womenfolk tales. Because, forsooth, the wise do say that Lyphia loveth but one land, and that which groweth on it and liveth alike, with no difference, be it the smallest of common apple trees or the most wretched of insects. And all nations are no more to her than that thinnest of trees, because, forsooth, they too will be gone, and new, different tribes will follow. But Lyphia eternal is, was, and ever shall be, until the end of time.
Until the end of time, sang the troubadour, and strummed his lute. Torque joined in with a high trill on his reed pipes.
Hail, Lady of the Fields, for the harvest, for the flowers in Dolblatana, but also for the hide of the undersigned, which you save from being riddled with arrows.
Do you know what? I'm going to tell you something.
He stopped playing, hugged the lute like a child, and grew sad.
I don't think I'll mention the elves and the difficulties they've got to struggle with in the ballad. There'll be no shortage of scum wanting to go into the mountains. Why hasten the...
The troubadour grew silent.
Go on, finish, said Torque bitterly. You wanted to say, hasten what can't be avoided, the inevitable.
Let's not talk about it, interrupted Geralt. Why talk about it? Words aren't necessary. Follow Leela's example.
She spoke to the elf telepathically, muttered the bard. I sensed it. I'm right, aren't I, Geralt? After all, you can sense communication like that. Did you understand what she was getting across to the elf?
Some of it.
What was she talking about?
Hope. That things renew themselves and won't stop doing so.
Is that all?
That was enough.
Geralt, Leela lives in the village among people. Do you think that...
That she'll stay with them. Here, in Dolblatana. Maybe. If...
If what?
If people prove worthy of it. If the edge of the world remains the edge of the world. If we respect the boundaries. But enough of this talk, boys. Time to sleep.
True. It's nearly midnight. The fire's burning out. I'll sit up for a little while yet. I've always found it easiest to invent rhymes beside a dying fire. And I need a title for my ballad. A nice title.
Maybe the edge of the world?
But no, snorted the poet. Even if it really is the edge, it's got to be described differently. Metaphorically.
I take it you know what a metaphor is, Geralt.
Let me think. Where... Oh, bloody hell. Where...
Good night,
said the devil. The Voice of Reason, 6. The Witcher unlaced his shirt and peeled the wet linen from his neck. It was very warm in the cave, hot even. The air hung heavy and moist, the humidity condensing in droplets on the moss-covered boulders and basalt blocks of the walls. Plants were everywhere. They grew out of beds, hewn into the bedrock and filled with peat, in enormous chests, troughs and flower pots. They climbed up rocks, up wooden trellises and stakes. Geralt examined them with interest, recognizing some rare specimens, those which made up the ingredients of a witch's medicines and elixirs, magical filters and a sorcerer's decoctions, and others, even rarer, whose qualities he could only guess at. Some he didn't know at all, or hadn't even heard of. He saw stretches of star-leafed melilot, compact balls of puffheads pouring out of huge flower pots, shoots of arenaria strewn with berries as red as blood. He recognized the meaty, thickly-veined leaves of fastame, the crimson-golden ovals of measure-me-nots, and the dark arrows of sawcuts. He noticed pinnated pondblood moss huddled against stone blocks, the glistening tubers of raven's eye, and the tiger-striped petals of the mouse-tail orchid. In the shady part of the grotto bulged caps of the suant mushroom, grey as stones in a field. Not far from them grew reach cluster, an antidote to every known toxin and venom. The modest yellow-grey brushes, peering from chests deeply sunken into the ground, revealed scarix, a root with powerful and universal medicinal qualities. The centre of the cave was taken up by aqueous plants. Geralt saw vats full of hornwort and turtle duckweed, and tanks covered in a compact skin of liverwort, fodder for the parasitic giant oyster. Glass reservoirs full of gnarled rhizomes of the hallucinogenic bitip, slender, dark green cryptocorines and clusters of nematodes. Muddy, silted troughs were breeding grounds for innumerable phycomycetes, algae, moulds and swamp lichen. Neneca, rolling up the sleeves of her priestess's robe, took a pair of scissors and a little bone rake from her basket and got to work. Geralt sat on a bench between shafts of light falling through huge crystal blocks in the cave's vault. The priestess muttered and hummed under her breath, deftly plunging her hands into the thicket of leaves and shoots, snipping with her scissors and filling the basket with bunches of weeds. She adjusted the stakes and frames supporting the plants and, now and again, turned the soil with her small rake. Sometimes, muttering angrily, she pulled out dried or rotted stalks, threw them into the humus containers as food for mushrooms and other squamous and snake-like twisted plants which the Witcher didn't recognize. He wasn't even sure they were plants at all. It seemed to him the glistening rhizomes moved a little, stretching their hair-like offshoots towards the priestess's hands. It was warm, very warm.
Geralt?
Yes?
He fought off an overwhelming sleepiness. Neneca, playing with her scissors, was looking at him from behind the huge, pinnated leaves of sand-spurry flybush.
Don't leave yet. Stay. A few more days.
No, Neneca. It's time for me to be on my way.
Why the hurry? You don't have to worry about Herivard, and let that vagabond Dandelion go and break his neck on his own. Stay, Geralt.
No, Neneca.
The priestess snipped with scissors.
Are you in such haste to leave the temple because you're afraid that she'll find you here?
Yes, he admitted reluctantly. You've guessed.
It wasn't exactly difficult, she muttered. But don't worry, Yennefer's already been here, 2 months ago. She won't be back in a hurry because we quarrelled. No, not because of you. She didn't ask about you.
She didn't ask.
That's where it hurts, the priestess laughed. You're egocentric, like all men. There's nothing worse than a lack of interest, is there? Than indifference? No, but don't lose heart. I know Yennefer only too well. She didn't ask anything, but she did look around attentively, looking for signs of you. And she's mighty furious at you, that I did feel.
What did you quarrel about?
Nothing that would interest you.
I know, anyway.
I don't think so, said Neneke calmly, adjusting the stakes. You know her very superficially, as, incidentally, she knows you. It's quite typical of the relationship which binds you, or did bind you. Both parties aren't capable of anything other than a strongly emotional evaluation of the consequences, while ignoring the causes.
She came looking for a cure, he remarked coldly. That's what you quarrelled about. Admit it.
I won't admit anything.
The Witcher got up and stood in full light under one of the crystal sheets in the grotto's vault.
Come here a minute, Neneke. Take a look at this.
He unknotted a secret pocket in his belt, dug out a tiny bundle, a miniature purse made of goat leather, and poured the contents into his palm.
2 diamonds, a ruby, 3 pretty nephrites, and an interesting agate.
Neneke was knowledgeable about everything.
How much did they cost you?
2,500 Temeria Orans. Payment for the Vachim Strigger.
For a tall neck, grimaced the priestess. Oh, well, it's a question of price. But you did well to turn cash into these trinkets. The Orin is weak, and the cost of stones in Vachim isn't high. It's too near to the dwarves' mines in Mahakam. If you sell those in Novigrad, you'll get at least 500 Novigrad crowns, and the crown at present stands at 6.5 orins and is going up.
I'd like you to take them.
For safekeeping?
No. Keep the nephrites for the temple as, shall we say, my offering to the goddess Melitela, and the remaining stones are for her, for Yennefer. Give them to her when she comes to visit you again, which will no doubt be soon.
Neneke looked him straight in the eyes.
I wouldn't do this if I were you. You'll make her even more furious, if that's possible, believe me. Leave everything as it is, because you're no longer in a position to mend anything or make anything better. Running away from her, you behaved, well, let's say in a manner not particularly worthy of a mature man. By trying to wipe away your guilt with precious stones, you'll behave like a very, very over-mature man. I really don't know what sort of a man I can stand less.
She was too possessive, he muttered, turning away his face. I couldn't stand it. She treated me like...
Stop it, she said sharply. Don't cry on my shoulder. I'm not your mother, and I won't be your confidant either. I don't give a shit how she treated you, and I care even less how you treated her. And I don't intend to be a go-between or give these stupid jewels to her. If you want to be a fool, do it without using me as an intermediary.
You misunderstand. I'm not thinking of appeasing or bribing her. But I do owe her something. And the treatment she wants to undergo is apparently very costly. I want to help her, that's all.
You're more of an idiot than I thought.
Neneke picked up the basket from the ground.
A costly treatment. Help. Geralt, these jewels of yours are, to her, knick-knacks not worth spitting on. Do you know how much Yennefer can earn for getting rid of an unwanted pregnancy for a great lady?
I do happen to know, and that she earns even more for curing infertility. It's a shame she can't help herself in that respect. That's why she's seeking help from others. Like you.
No one can help her. It's impossible. She's a sorceress. Like most female magicians, her ovaries are atrophied, and it's irreversible. She'll never be able to have children.
Not all sorcerers are handicapped in this respect. I know something about that, and you do too.
Neneke closed her eyes.
Yes, I do.
Something can't be a rule if there are exceptions to it. And please don't give me any banal untruths about exceptions proving the rule. Tell me something about exceptions as such.
Only one thing, she said coldly, can be said about exceptions. They exist, nothing more. But Yennefer... Well, unfortunately, she isn't an exception. At least, not as regards the handicap we're talking about. In other respects, it's hard to find a greater exception than her.
Sorcerers.
Geralt wasn't put off by Neneke's coldness or her illusion. Have raised the dead.
I know of proven cases, and it seems to me that raising the dead is harder than reversing the atrophy of any organs.
You're mistaken,
because I don't know of one single proven, fully successful case of reversing atrophy or regenerating endocrine glands. Geralt, that's enough. This is beginning to sound like a consultation. You don't know anything about these things. I do. And if I tell you that Yennefer has paid for certain gifts by losing others, then that's how it is.
If it's so clear, then I don't understand why she keeps on trying to.
You understand very little, interrupted the priestess. Bloody little. Stop worrying about Yennefer's complaints and think about your own. Your body was also subjected to changes which are irreversible. She surprises you, but what about you? It ought to be clear to you, too, that you're never going to be human. But you still keep trying to be one, making human mistakes. Mistakes a witcher shouldn't be making.
He leant against the wall of the cave and wiped the sweat from his brow.
You're not answering, stated Neneca, smiling faintly. I'm not surprised. It's not easy to speak with the voice of reason. You're sick, Geralt. You're not fully fit. You react to elixirs badly. You've got a rapid pulse rate. The dilation of your eyes is slow. Your reactions are delayed. You can't get the simplest signs right. And you want to hit the trail? You have to be treated. You need therapy. And before that, a trance.
Is that why you sent Yola to me? As part of the therapy? To make the trance easier? You're a fool, but not to such an extent.
Neneca turned away and slipped her hands among the meaty stalks of creepers which the witcher didn't recognise.
Well, have it your way, she said easily. Yes, I sent her to you, as part of the therapy. And let me tell you, it worked. Your reactions were much better the following day. You were calmer. And Yola needed some therapy too. Don't be angry.
I'm not angry because of the therapy, or because of Yola.
But at the voice of reason you're hearing?
He didn't answer.
A trance is necessary, repeated Neneca, glancing around at her cave garden. Yola's ready. She's made both physical and psychic contact with you. If you want to leave, let's do it tonight.
No, I don't want to. Look, Neneca, Yola might start to prophesy during the trance, to predict, read the future. That's just it, exactly. And I don't want to know the future. How could I do what I'm doing if I knew it? Besides, I know it anyway.
Are you sure?
He didn't answer.
Oh, well, all right, she sighed. Let's go. Oh, and Geralt, I don't mean to pry, but tell me, how did you meet, you and Yennefer? How did it all start?
The witcher smiled.
It started with me and Dandelion not having anything for breakfast and deciding to catch some fish.
Am I to understand that instead of fish you caught Yennefer?
I'll tell you what happened, but maybe after supper. I'm hungry.
Let's go then. I've got everything I need.
The witcher made a move towards the exit and once more looked around the cave hothouse. Neneca.
Uh-huh.
Half of the plants you got here don't grow anywhere else anymore. Am I right?
Yes, more than half.
How come?
If I said it was through the goddess Melitela's grace, I dare say that wouldn't be enough for you, would it?
I dare say it wouldn't.
That's what I thought.
Neneca smiled.
You see, Geralt, this bright sun of ours is still shining, but not quite the way it used to. Read the great books if you like. But if you don't want to waste time on it, maybe you'll be happy with the explanation that the crystal roof acts like a filter. It eliminates the lethal rays, which are increasingly found in sunlight. That's why plants, which you can't see growing wild anywhere in the world, grow here.
I understand, nodded the witcher. And us, Neneca? What about us? The sun shines on us too. Shouldn't we shelter under a roof like that?
In principle, yes, sighed the priestess. But...
But what?
It's too late.
The Last Wish. Part 1. The catfish stuck its barbled head above the surface, tugged with force, splashed, stirred the water and flashed its white belly. "Careful, Dandelion!" shouted the Witcher, digging his heels into the wet sand.
"Hold him, dammit! I am holding him!" groaned the poet. "Heavens, what a monster! It's a leviathan, not a fish! There'll be some good eating on that, dear gods! Loosen it, or the line will snap!"
The catfish clung to the bed and threw itself against the current towards the bend in the river. The line hissed as Dandelion's and Geralt's gloves smouldered.
"Pull, Geralt, pull! Don't loosen it, or it'll get tangled up in the roots! The line will snap! No, it won't pull!"
They hunched up and pulled. The line cut the water with a hiss, vibrated and scattered droplets, which glistened like mercury in the rising sun. The catfish suddenly surfaced, set the water seething just below the surface, and the tension of the line eased. They quickly started to gather up the slack.
"We'll smoke it," panted Dandelion. "We'll take it to the village and get it smoked, and we'll use the head for soup. Careful!"
Feeling the shallows under its belly, the catfish threw half of its 12-foot-long body out of the water, tossed its head, whacked its flat tail, and took a sharp dive into the depths. Their gloves smouldered anew.
"Pull! Pull! To the bank, the son of a bitch! The line is creaking. Loosen it, Dandelion. It'll hold, don't worry. We'll cook the head for soup."
The catfish, dragged near to the bank again, surged and strained furiously against them, as if to let them know he wasn't that easy to get into the pot. The spray flew 6 feet into the air.
"We'll sell the skin!"
Dandelion, red with effort, pulled the line with both hands.
"And the barbels! We'll use the barbels to make..."
Nobody ever found out what the poet was going to make from the catfish's barbels. The line snapped with a crack, and both fishermen, losing their balance, fell onto the wet sand.
"Bloody hell!"
Dandelion yelled so loud that the echo resounded through the osiers.
"So much grub escaped! I hope you die, you son of a catfish!"
"I told you!"
Geralt shook his wet trousers. "I told you not to use force when you pull. You screwed up, my friend. You make as good a fisherman as a goat's arse makes a trumpet."
"That's not true."
The troubadour was outraged. "It's my doing that the monster took the bait in the first place."
"Oh, really? You didn't lift a finger to help me set the line? You played the lute and hollered so the whole neighbourhood could hear you. Nothing more."
"You're wrong."
Dandelion bared his teeth.
"When you fell asleep, you see, I took the grubs off the hook and attached a dead crow, which I'd found in the bushes. I wanted to see your face in the morning when you pulled the crow out, and the catfish took the crow. Your grubs would have caught shit all."
They would have.
The Witcher spat into the water, winding the line onto a little wooden rake, but it snapped because you tugged like an idiot. "Wind up the rest of the lines instead of gabbling. The sun's already up, it's time to go. I'm going to pack up."
"Geralt!"
"What?"
"There's something on the other line, too." "Oh, no. Damn it. It only got caught." "Hell! It's holding like a stone! I can't do it! That's it! Look what I'm bringing in! It must be the wreck of a barge from King Desmond's time! What great stuff! Look, Geralt!"
Dandelion was clearly exaggerating. The clump of rotted ropes, net and algae pulled out of the water was impressive, but it was far from being the size of a barge dating from the days of the legendary king. The bard scattered the jumble over the bank and began to dig around in it with the tip of his shoe. The algae was alive with leeches, scuds and little crabs.
"Ha! Look what I found!"
Geralt approached, curious. The find was a chipped stoneware jar, something like a two-handled amphora, tangled up in netting, black with rotten algae, colonies of caddis larvae and snails, dripping with stinking slime.
"Ha!"
Dandelion exclaimed again proudly.
"Do you know what this is?"
"It's an old pot."
"You're wrong,"
declared the troubadour, scraping away shells and hardened shiny clay.
"This is a charmed jar. There's a djinn inside who'll fulfil my 3 wishes.
The Witcher snorted.
"You can laugh!"
Dandelion finished his scraping, bent over and rinsed the amphora.
"But there's a seal on the spigot, and a wizard's mark on the seal."
"What mark? Let's see."
"Oh, sure." The poet hid the jar behind his back. And what more do you want? I'm the one who found it, and I need all the wishes.
Don't touch that seal. Leave it alone.
Let go, I tell you, it's mine.
Dandelion, be careful.
Sure, don't touch it, oh bloody hell.